Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Today, we continue our series of programs on springing forward in spirit and health, emotionally, and in our relationships, blooming at midlife like the flowers of spring. And as regular listeners know, our primary challenge to you at middle age, at any age after all, is to wake up to a life of purpose, love, joy, and freedom, and to overcome those blocks, external and internal, that have been holding you back so that you can stop sleepwalking through life like I did for 30 years. And as my guest today affirms, every one of us has something special to share with the world. And all too many of us, as we're aware, myself included, when we are not living up to our full potential, we wind up frustrated, depressed, and feeling hopeless. Or perhaps, like me, for 30 years, you trudge along in your middle years, low on energy, striving for ill-defined or unworthy objectives, postponing or giving up on dreams, and continually making excuses to yourself and others as to why you're so unfulfilled and haven't accomplished more. And if this describes you or someone you know and love, take heart. My guest today, Dr. Abraham Joppe, M.D., is here to suggest how to find your very own divine brilliance, can't say it very well, experienced healings of the parts of you that are holding your gift to the world back, and align with your true purpose so that you can experience abundant success, joy, fulfillment in life. And he'll also describe how spiritual healing has helped men and women recover from life-threatening diseases and emotional distress. And Dr. Abraham Joppe, M.D., is a medical doctor trained in traditional general medicine from the University of Illinois School of Medicine. He subsequently traveled around the world to study with indigenous healers and traditional doctors in places like Japan, Tibet, India, Hawaii, South America, and Jerusalem. And he's co-founder of the University of Spiritual Healing and Sufism in Napa Valley, California. Currently serves as a healer, teacher, and internationally known speaker on spirituality, healing, and world peace. And over the past 25 years has helped bring the light and healing to thousands of men and women suffering from various physical and emotional ailments. And hello, Dr. Joppe. It's indeed an honor to have you with us here today.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted, actually, to talk with you and feel just the integrity of this program and how much you're really seeking to serve the people and really help. It touches my heart that there are people out there in this kind of service. So I also want to thank you for what you're doing.
Well, so that we can better understand of where you are coming from, tell us a little about your background. What inspired you upon completing your residency in Illinois to travel around the world studying with healers and spiritual masters? And how have you incorporated Western medicine and ancient spiritual healing in your practice today?
Well, I'm kind of what I would call it an adventure doctor. I like adventure, and I'm working with this type of thing. So traveling has always been something exciting to me, and anything that's new and different is exciting.
Oh, I see.
So I had the luck, I guess you'd call it, of being involved in a very dramatic medical case in Chicago. Oh. In the 80s, where I was in medical school, I was doing my residency, actually, and there was a young girl dying, and she was dying of acute hepatitis, and she was from the Jewish community in Chicago, and they realized that medically we were failing. Hmm. And she was in the ICU with me. I was her physician. And we were losing her. That was the bottom line. So she was very young. She was 17. She was a high school student. And, it was one of those cases that kind of break your heart.
Yeah.
And the Jewish rabbis went to Jerusalem. They actually called the head Jewish rabbi in Jerusalem.
Yeah.
And he went into the ancient Talmudic system.
Yeah.
And they found an ancient technique for healing hepatitis, and which had to do with putting these doves on the belly of the girl, which if they absorbed the light or the illness, it wasn't clear what they were doing actually, but the story was if the doves died, that they would actually be pulling out the light of the disease and the person would heal.
I'll be darned.
So we were, that was kind of exciting. I mean, for me personally, that was very exciting.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, is it really possible that there are like ancient methods of healing that could transcend modern medicine that could potentially heal somebody dying of hepatitis?
Huh.
I was very excited about it. It was interesting, although in my hospital, which was a fairly good sized hospital, there were only two of us, one social worker and myself, that would even face this. The rest of the hospital was up. It was so raging.
Yeah, that's typical.
Yeah, exactly. How dare they think that there's something out there other than traditional medicine?
Yeah.
So, I was excited. Well, they brought the doves into the ICU, which was probably the one mistake they really made. But anyways, in the sense that it was, the doves could have disease, and the doctors were looking for some reason to get this thing handled.
Yeah, that would seem like a good excuse.
Exactly. It was the perfect excuse. And so we started the process. I was in the room watching, and the rabbis did the thing, and they put the doves on. And, of course, the first dove took one breath, fell over dead.
Oh, wow.
And it was amazing. I mean, you're just like, what in the world?
Yeah.
So 18 doves later, the doves are still falling over dead.
Huh.
And in that period of time, the nurse had been adjusting the medications that the girl was on. Every 15 minutes, she would, go in, redo the vitals, readjust the intravenous medications.
Yeah.
At the end of 18 doves, the woman had all her vital signs had completely normalized. She was completely coming back.
Huh.
So at that moment, of course, the doctors came in, it felt like shotguns and six guns and, basically
you
said,
the doves are all dead.
The doves are all dead, and you're going to be shortly, too, if you don't get out of this hospital. And we kind of got pushed out, and everybody walked out, and they went out to the medical director who allowed it. This guy was, talk about sweating bullets. This guy was, he was sweating, drenched with the fact that he was going to lose his medical directorship.
Yeah. Wow.
So, anyways, the news was that for me, after I saw that, I said, I love medicine. I really had planned to be an ICU doc or emergency doc, but after seeing that, I said, wow, there are secrets of healing out here that are far beyond anything we know.
Yeah.
And I want to know those.
Well, your biography indicates that you're, pardon me if I mispronounce this, a murshid or a spiritual teacher in Sufi, spiritual healing. And without going into exhaustive detail, give us some details of the core tenets of Sufism and what's so special about Sufi spiritual healing and how does it help heal both body and spirit together. I'm fascinated by that.
Yeah, those are very good questions. I mean, Sufism was the end of my journey of, exploring non-traditional healing.
I see.
And the reason I ended with it was because I actually believed that it was the most profound.
Huh.
And I looked. I mean, like I said, you read, I've been in Zen temples and in Hindu monasteries and, kahuna sanctuaries and all sorts of things looking for the secrets of healing, and here I end up in Sufism. But why? And the reason was, first of all, that the man I met who was the healer was the most profoundly enlightened human being I had run across. And I had spent time with many masters, you know, professed enlightened masters in different traditions. But this guy was just so wise and, you know, I mean, just like instantaneous knowledge of anything that was asked.
Wow.
And I thought that, I was so impressed by the level of Gnostic ability that he had that it brought instant trust, because there was absolutely no way he could have knowledge into the secrets of myself. He knew things about me that nobody else knew but me.
You mean he was even more knowledgeable than the politicians?
Yeah.
Claimed to know everything.
They claim to know everything and a wiretap to get it, and they still don't know it. Right, exactly. Yeah, no, he was wiser than that.
Yeah,
exactly. No, he at that time I was really sick. I had gotten very sick, and he, without knowing anything, he looked into me within 30 seconds, and he had diagnosed me. Prognosed me. I mean, the doctors had told me I had 6 months to live. He looked at me. He said, "Your heart's failing," which it was. "You have 6 months to live," which is what my diagnosis was.
Yeah.
And he, within a matter of minutes, also had the remedy to heal me.
So what, in general, what does Sufism propose as a remedy to those types of things? What's the secret to it, in other words?
The secret's very simple. The first understanding of it's a little bit complex, but essentially, disease comes as a teaching to the soul.
I see.
So anytime we get sick, really what's happening is that the soul has somehow gotten trapped in suffering of some type.
Yeah.
And the suffering of its entrapment is what's causing the illness.
Oh, I see. That can also cause emotional illness, I guess, as well as physical illness.
Absolutely, and psychological, and any suffering.
Huh. That's fascinating. So then in Sufi spiritual healing, the key to love, joy, freedom, and purpose is connecting directly to God, is it? Or how do you, address that problem that's making you ill physically or emotionally?
Exactly. That's exactly. If you can turn the soul from its place of entrapment to connecting with God and receiving what God wants to give you through the teaching, you release the suffering. And releasing the suffering, you release the disease. In turning to God, you find freedom, and in what God gives you, such as mercy or compassion or love, you actually complete the teaching that you were trying to reach in the first place.
And obviously you can't sum it up in a few words, but how do you begin in that process of connecting to God? How do you get started in something like that?
Well, that is the key, that is really the master question that you're asking, and the answer is that the answer is actually in all the monotheistic texts, the Bible, the Torah, the Quran. It says, if you read carefully through all those texts, almost all the chapters begin in the name of God, the merciful and the compassionate.
Isn't that amazing that all the major religions of the world, despite all the disputes going on and wars and everything else, they all essentially have the same basic message?
Yes. In the Sufi, we actually believe that they are the same teaching, that were revealed to different teachers, Jesus and Moses and Muhammad, but that the teaching is the same, and that the path to reach oneness with God in the name of God, the merciful and the compassionate, that's the goal of all those paths.
Yes, that's so true. It's so sorry when various religions seek to shut out other religions or become enemies with other religions and say ours is the only way, because obviously an infinite being, God or Allah, whatever you call the divine being, has various ways to send messages to us, little human beings. One group of humans doesn't necessarily have all the right answers, and everyone else doesn't.
Exactly. This is exactly God. God reveals His face through every teaching.
That's exactly right. But, Well, you indicate that each one of us has something special to share with the world. And the problem is so many of us at middle age have fallen into patterns of daily living, you know, career, family, responsibilities, and we've long since forgotten, or perhaps we never really knew what that something special is. How do you go about finding your true purpose, or as you call it, your inner brilliance? And where do you start to doing that?
Well, the key is actually in two pieces. It's starting with retreat because, you know, especially as we hit middle age, you know, we're tired. And we've gotten lost, like you said, in family, and often not just family, but in trauma. You know, we got hurt. And we never recovered from the hurts, a divorce, a breakup, a loss of job. You know, who knows what it was, but those things hurt us.
We seem to remember our hurts a lot longer than the good times.
Exactly. The hurts are traumatic. And, you know, we don't realize how powerful they are, but they, you know, they deeply affect. Like, for example, one of my early clients was a very famous writer. I don't want to say who he was out of confidentiality, but he was, you know, one of the top writers of this genre. But his publisher cheated him.
Oh, great.
And because the publisher cheated him, he went into distrust. And because of the distrust, he got writer's block. He couldn't write anymore.
I'll be darned.
Yeah. So he came to me and said, what am I doing? I can't write. He didn't even know why he had writer's block. He just knew he couldn't write. But when we got into it, we found out that why should I write if they're going to steal my books?
Yeah.
So that was his trauma. It blocked him up. And he was not only was he stuck not being able to write, but he also was in pain because he felt betrayed.
Yeah.
So in our situations in middle age, we're all dealing with that stuff.
Yeah.
And the first step is we have to go on a retreat and find it. And
yeah, that's so many of our guests have said that until you really define what the core problem is that's holding you back, it's very difficult to address it.
Exactly. They're
and
exactly
also,
right.
You know, when you look in books and outside yourself, you're not really going to find it likely.
Exactly.
You really have to look within.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, you have to take the time. It's not necessarily going to happen because you take a day off or a weekend off.
No.
You know, you may need to take a week or two or sometimes, you know, really deep trauma, three or four.
Yeah. So
you know, and then
retreat,
once
and then is really a key to really get away from all the distractions and everything else that keeps our mind busy and away from the core.
Exactly. Get away from the distraction. And of course, if you can do it with, you know, a teacher who is spiritual, they will help you because they can help pull you inside and help you, you know, approach the places that are in pain for you.
Yeah. Well, how do we clear the blocks inside that keep telling us we're not good enough? You know, some of those probably were planted when we were kids. It says, you know, you're not smart enough to do this, or you don't deserve success. And we never, we'll never really unlock true love and joy in our lives and the freedom to determine our own destiny until we can do that. And where do these blocks come from, and what's the methodology to remove them?
Yeah, again, great questions. And the answer is that the first step is you go on a retreat and find them.
Yeah.
And the second step, in a broad way, is we have to surrender it to God.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that's hard to do, to truly surrender to God. I've tried to do that a number of times, and it's easier said than done for me. I don't know if that's true of most people, but
well, I think that we don't have the methodology. We weren't really taught that, you know, how to do that. And that's where the Sufi spiritual healing techniques are so valuable.
I see.
In that if you learn to understand what God is, not as a concept, but as an inner reality or an inner experience, so that you can actually find the light of God inside of yourself.
Yeah, that's so key to find that connection to God inside yourself rather than some external being up in, you know, up in heaven or wherever.
Right, that's what people are turning to. You know, this being up in heaven, we're surrendering to Him, but we don't even know what it is.
Yeah.
So how do we really surrender to what we don't know?
That's very true. So your purpose then is to find God inside yourself, or that inner voice inside yourself that's connected to the divine purpose, or is that what you're trying to do? Really?
Yes, exactly. You find that voice, or you find that light, and once you find it, and there's methods to do that, then what you do is you essentially take the wound. Once you find the wound, which is the other major piece, how do I find the wound and how do I find the light of God? When you bring those two together, this profound alchemy happens. There's something mysterious and transformational happens almost beyond our abilities to understand it.
Yeah. Yeah, there's so much in the universe beyond our ability to understand, but it works.
Yes. And this is the master key. And the funny thing about it, it's not hard. It's actually so very simple.
Huh.
And we make it. It is so easy to do.
I'll be darned. Yeah, I think so many people are battling so hard to find that spirit or to find it, and maybe they're just not doing the simple way that you're talking about.
Right, exactly. They're making it so difficult, and it's actually it's easy as just essentially walking or feeding yourself. It's just a very simple process. Spirituality is no more difficult than putting on your clothes in the morning.
I see. Well, so many of us are held back by the fear of trying something new. We're too timid to succeed, in other words. What if I fail and I'm humiliated? How will I pay my bills or avoid financial ruin if my new venture fails? Where does fear come from and how can we overcome that? I guess, again, we need to understand it, where it's coming from.
Well, I think fear is natural. It's in people. You know, it's part of our programming. You know, it keeps us alive. You know, I think that there are forces out there, both within and without, that want to keep us in fear because, you know, if we're afraid, we're controllable.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that they're, you know, you watch TV, you know, right? You know, we're constantly being told that, you know, there's, you know, communists around the corner. No, it's a terrorist around the corner. You know, next week it'll be
communist yesterday, it's terrorist today.
Right. Tomorrow, what do we got left? Aliens. I don't know. You know, what's going to come next that we're going to be terrified of, you know?
Yeah, I noticed on one of the video or somewhere on one of your website, you talked about the belly is the kind of the inner child, and that's where fear begins. And you have to, but then you look in the heart and see what the real cause of your fear is.
Yeah. The way, again, this goes back to Sufi teachings, but we say the nafs or the ego self is kind of situated in the belly.
Oh, I see.
And so most of the inner child egoic development happened down there.
I see.
But the real healing actually happens in the heart because the heart and the soul actually come together. So the deeper healing actually going to happen up above in the heart.
Yeah, I noticed when you said that the heart may be saying, there's no love for me, I will be hurt, you know, that kind of...
Exactly. The belly might say, I'm really scared because... if I go and ask that person out, they're going to reject me. Or if I try to take a new venture and start something new at 40 years old, I'm going to fail.
Yeah.
But in the heart, what we're really hearing is, I'm really afraid that when I went to mommy at 3 years old, mommy didn't give me the love. And if I try it again, mommy's not going to give me the love, so I'm just not going to do it.
Yeah. Well, that's fascinating. Well, none of us live in a vacuum, and to be joyful and to achieve our purpose in life, we need continually to interact with others. And in your upcoming 2015 summit, you promise attendees the 7 C's of relationships that can transform your personal relationships. Can you give us a sneak preview by discussing 1 or 2 of these secrets?
That's great. Yeah, the 7 C's, after working with people for 30 years now, I kind of said, what were the primary issues that I've run into through the relationship work? And it came down to these 7 C's. And each C essentially is, for example, the first C is commitment.
Oh, yes, that's so key.
You know, and like for today, I was on the line with a young woman. She's 35. She fell in love with a man. And, you know, she wants to have a family with him.
Yeah.
He doesn't want it.
Oh, great.
You know, so she's brokenhearted.
Yeah.
And he's like, I need time to find myself. I can't commit to you.
Famous line.
Exactly.
Bachelors.
Right. You know, so she's crying and going through her process. But yeah. you know, really when we got down to it, it was so fascinating that, you see, what had happened was that as a child, she had had an experience with a brother where he had not abused her, but had explored with her.
Oh, wow.
And he had kind of opened up at a very early age certain, you know, things that shouldn't have been opened at that age.
Yeah.
And so here, as she got older, she wanted the holiness of relationship, but behind it, she was being driven by the need for passion that had been opened by this brother.
Oh, I see.
So she was actually drawing in men who were like the brother, who were going for the passion,
but
didn't actually have the desire for the commitment.
Now, isn't that great? The way you describe that, it just the way that opens up, and now she knows what's causing her to attract these wrong kind of guys that don't really want to make a commitment. That's very fascinating.
Isn't that amazing? And so when she understood that, she was like, "Wow, what am I doing with this guy if he doesn't want me in a deep way?" And I said, "Yes, what are you doing with him?" And she said, "Well, I'm done." And I said, "That's right. That's exactly right."
And at the
right.
other hand, she's uncovering one of those blocks that's been blocking her from having a real relationship with the kind of person she'd want to have a relationship with.
Exactly. And that's the beauty. You see, when we work with the godly light, how we found that was it became illuminated by the godly light. So the knowledge that God brought in was actually about the inner truth of what was really behind why her relationships weren't working.
Yeah. And then she can really be the type of person that the right kind of individual would want to attract and be attached to, so that it would work in a perfect circle there.
Exactly. And that's what she chose to do. And that's, again, for us, you know, people who are middle age, you know, in essence, if we can find really what the godly lights are asking us or revealing to us about our inner reality, why we got stuck, what we really are needing, and open that up, what I have found is that every human being has a destiny decreed in there.
Yeah. And that, yeah, destiny, that's fascinating, the way you talk about that special gift that every one of us has, and so few of us really are prepared to give that wonderful gift out to humanity, to our fellow persons, and it's such a shame that so many of us is wasted with the turmoil we create in our lives and don't really get to the basic purpose of what we're here for.
Yes, yeah, exactly. This is, you know, if we can find the true gift inside of us, as you're saying, and open that up, all the passion and all the reason for why we're here will come pouring back in.
Yeah. Well, you're known internationally for your message of peace. And in 2010, you were given the Man of Peace Award. With our world so full of war and hatred, is there anything that listeners and I, and not world political leaders, can do to promote peacefulness and understanding among people? And how do we influence these politicians that keep driving us in the wrong direction?
Right. I think the key is we have to be strong.
Yeah.
And we have to stand for what we know to be right and not be afraid to speak the truth to anybody.
Yeah, that's very true. And we can't sit around and live in fear of what might happen in the world, I guess. And,
exactly.
You know, come out. Venture out because of what we heard the news.
There was a study I saw years ago that showed that within 7 people, you could reach anybody in the world. So if I wanted to reach President Obama, that I'm 7 people away from him.
Okay, well, I'll join you. That leaves only 5 more to go.
But each of us, everyone on this call, it means that we have the potential through, you know, we talk to a friend who talks to a friend, and all of a sudden we're affecting governments.
Yeah, that's so true. And yet so many of us feel so hopeless when we, politicians promise one thing and don't deliver, and then we feel like we really don't have any power, but that's fascinating.
No. Don't listen to those voices. Don't listen to that. You have great power and great possibility, and working with the truth and with love and being truthful to what's real inside of your heart, what you know to be right, don't underestimate how powerful you are.
Yeah. Well, certainly we're powerful in our little corner of the world, and if everyone works on their own personal relationships and the people they meet on the street and the people they communicate with and spreading love and goodwill, that will expand out in ever-broadening circles.
Exactly.
It only takes seven.
Yeah.
Well, please give us your web address. Where I'm fascinated by this introduction to the your spiritual healing. Where can listeners learn more about you and your Sufi spiritual healing resources and upcoming seminars and workshops? What's your website address?
They can go to www.drjaffemd.com.
And that's just drjaffemd.com, right?
Yeah, and Jaffe's with an F, so it's J-A-F-F-E.
Okay. And tell us about your four-day 2015 summit that you've got coming up in West Hollywood. I think it's May 14th through 17th.
Well, that is our peak introductory experience for people who want to learn this path. And, the spiritual healing, how to start to walk towards God, how to apply it, for relationships, and then ultimately, opening up that brilliance in your soul.
Yeah, that's...
I would recommend, anybody who really feels like you've been stuck, and you want to get out of that rut that you've been in for God knows how many years, and you want to really, try something new and different that can, really make the change in yourself, this would be a very, very exciting and very powerful way of doing it.
Yes, it certainly sounds like it. But for those of us in the South, Midwest, Northeast, whatever, that can't get to the seminar or don't live in the greater L.A. area or Southern California, is there any way that, what's the best way to locate, a Sufi spiritual teacher in our geographic area so that we could study under them and learn a lot of these techniques of healing and spiritual growth?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the easiest right now would just be to either go to my website, and there's a a connect email part of it. Just email us where you are. We have got over 300 teachers around the country.
Oh, wow.
And we can connect you up with one of them.
Well, this has been a most fascinating half an hour. In conclusion, the question that Dr. Jaffe poses are very similar to questions we raise on this program every week. Are you thirsty and in need of renewal and rebirth? Is it time for change in your life? Are you always looking for an answer but never quite finding it? Are you in need of deep emotional or physical healing? And if one or more of these issues is unsolved for you, if your life today is not full of purpose, joy, and love, and you feel like you're not giving of your best to the world, I recommend you visit Dr. Abraham Jaffe's website, www.drjaffemd.com, to learn more about the Sufi spiritual healing and its potential benefits to you. And thank you so much, Dr. Jaffe. This has been a most interesting half an hour, and best of success in spreading your message of healing throughout the world.
Yeah, thank you so much, Roy. I really appreciate it, and I really appreciate the interview, so thank you.
And peace be with you.
Peace be with you, too.
I'm certain you'll agree today's guest, Dr. Abraham Jaffe, offers a highly inspirational message of spiritual healing. And to close our program today, I'd like to talk about a related subject. How rapidly will spiritual transformation and midlife renewal take hold? Should you anticipate a Hollywood-like scenario, a sudden surge of enlightenment, perhaps accompanied by a drum roll, changing your life forever? In an instant, you will know precisely what you want out of life, the precious gifts and talents you have to share, and how you are going to get where you want to go. In effect, a spiritual awakening that many evangelical Christians label the born-again experience. Now, I'm not an evangelical, but I don't doubt for a moment that many have experienced the born-again experience. But is born-again common for middle-aged men and women like you and me who are seeking renewal? My personal experience, well, I'd answer with a highly equivocal yes and no. Yes, because several years ago, on a Sunday afternoon on a January 24th, tears of joy streamed down my face as I awakened from 30 years of sleepwalking through life. Out of the clear blue, I felt like a totally new person. New inspiration had struck me, and suddenly inspired to write books, give speeches, and conduct motivational seminars so I could encourage others to experience the renewal that I felt. On the other hand, I'd answer no, because when I woke up the next morning on January 25th, I recognized all the daunting challenges that faced me to alter long-established thought and behavior patterns, to change my profession, what I was doing to earn a living, and to convince others that I had changed. I would, of course, need to fend off persistent lapses into self-doubt and fear of failure. For me, sudden enlightenment was only a tenuous very first step to sustainable midlife transformation, and still to come, the daunting challenge to convert inspiration into action. Now, to undertake that conversion, the first stage is you need to envision your new life as a positive, spiritual, purpose-driven individual. Without a clear visualization of where you're going, you're not likely to get there. Fill in all the details, your desired career, relationships, priorities. What are you really good at? Who do you like to be around? What do you like to do in your spare time? What really talents do you have to share with the world? Continually visualize in your mind the positive emotional benefits of the new you. Think of how wonderful it will feel when you are a purposeful, spiritually guided individual and you have that positive demeanor wherever you go. Breathe in deeply the joys of positive living. You know, you don't start out with on a journey with no idea of where you're headed, do you? And the more solid your vision of an ideal future, the better your chances of arriving there. So you need to visualize all aspects of your life free of stress, with unlimited potential for growth and personal fulfillment, which all of us have within ourselves, sharing your unique talents in service to others. You know, we all have unique talents that we have to share whether we know what they are or not. And a lot of us have basically supplemented those talents for years. Maybe we were told as kids we weren't good enough to do something, and it was a bunch of BS. Then a good idea is to share some insights and your desire to renew your life with close friends and loved ones and ask for their advice and inspiration along the way. And by all means, keep open your line of communication with the highest power and ask for future guidance and inspiration. You know, you may have had that one-time inspiration, but if you believe in God, God is not just there to inspire you one time. He's there to inspire you and give advice every day. So once you awaken your mind to the world full of infinite possibilities, then the sky is your limit. The second stage is to begin mapping out a plan to carry you from today to tomorrow. Now, you may have no idea at the moment of inspiration of just how you're going to get there, but believe me, as you visualize the successful future that you're seeking, that plan will slowly come to you, maybe quickly, maybe slowly, but over time, you will find your way around every hurdle that may be in your path. And there's no need for immediate precipitous action. You don't need to run out and quit your job tomorrow. In fact, I would urge you not to unless you have something else lined up. And remember that today marks the beginning of the rest of your life. It's not the end of your life, and you don't have to get everything done tomorrow. With laser-like focus upon intended outcome, a reawakened curiosity, and your rejuvenated aptitude for adventure, it is all but certain that you will uncover a wealth of fresh opportunities so that you'll end up just in that position where you want to be. You know, the first true test of a born-again experience is the ability to transform that inspiration into a realistic plan of action, and your next test will be the ability to spring into action once that plan is complete. You know, if you sit around in paralysis of analysis, continuing to mess around with that plan in your mind, you won't really get anything done. A well-conceived plan followed up by taking action steps help you validate that fresh, positive outlook on life. Once you get going on implementing that plan, it makes a world of difference and you feel so good. I speak from experience. When I began writing my book, the whole world turned around and I felt excited about just about everything I was doing. You know, born-again awakening soon will die on the vine without a persistent visualization, insightful planning, and taking those first few steps forward, then routinely monitoring your progress to make sure that you have some goals, interim goals, and final goals in mind, and that you're making progress against or toward achieving those goals. And then it helps so much if you have reinforcement from family and close friends. If you're like me, you will suffer lapses of inspiration. Believe me, I've had a number of those over the years. And the only effective antidotes to those are prayer, meditation, persistent visualization. Don't neglect doing that. Seeking advice and inspiration from those you love, and a steady diet of self-reinforcement. Be sure to remind yourself daily you are in the midst of a positive midlife transformation. You know, as we all know, we can't always control external circumstances, politics, natural disasters, bad things that other people might do to us. But a positive attitude does tend to attract positive results. We've all heard the law of attraction, I'm sure, and there's a lot of truth to that. You and only you determine how you react to the world around you and to other people around you, and how you react will make a big difference in what happens to your future. An occasional backsliding from a positive mental attitude need not be fatal. In fact, we all benefit when we acknowledge a lapse in attitude or behavior and promise ourselves to do better the next time. Most important, we understand, if we can, why we had that lapse. Over time, positive thinking and behavior will become a second nature to you, and you will be truly a born-again individual. Whenever possible, join forces with others who are seeking midlife renewal, because pulling together as a team, others can help you and you can help them combat relapses, just like the recovering alcoholics do in AA. Above all else, do not despair if you do not experience an instantaneous moment of truth or a born-again awakening. Most of us don't, so we just keep plugging along. And for the vast majority, midlife renewal is a continuous work in progress. In the end, the only results that matter are enjoyment of sharing your unique gifts to the benefit of yourself and others, and an unwavering faith and confidence in your ability to influence a positive outcome with God's help, whatever the circumstance. Never rely upon yourself alone. As Dr. Jane in today's program, the surest path to joy and fulfillment is through spiritual connection with God, the higher power, however you might refer to God in your individual beliefs. Whether all at once or over time, the positive results will be the same. And for additional advice, please preview my comprehensive guidebook to Middle Age Renewal, A Midlife Challenge Wake Up by Roy C. Richards. That's me. That's my book. And also, I'd love to pass along my inspirational ideas on renewal as your own personal coach, as a motivational speaker at your next meeting, or as a renewal workshop leader for your company or organization. It's great to get all the employees together and talk about personal and organization renewal, and I'd love to do that for you. You can preview my book or contact me at www.middleagerenewal.com, and that's it for today. Now, every one of us, let's all go out and discover and then share with the world that highly unique blend of God-given talents that you have deep inside. You truly are one in a million, and middle age can be your best age.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.